W1590 AM Denmark, W250 CV Green Bay,
and always streaming on the Civic Media
ABC app. News, I'm Justin Finch. Auto workers could soon expand their strike. UAW Union President Sean Fain expected to announce if talks with automakers don't get better, more plants across the country could see workers walk off the job.
A week into this unprecedented strike, and there are no clear signs that this is moving closer to an end. In fact, the auto workers still picketing behind me, and the union is now poised to dial up the pressure.
ABC's Faith Abube. Workers want better pay, more benefits for new hires, and a four-day work week. The automakers say they're financially strapped as they build more electric cars. And a deadly bus crash outside New York City involving students and staff headed to band camp. The bus rolled over and down a highway ravine yesterday. Two adult women chaperones were killed. Authorities blamed the crash on a faulty bus tire. This is ABC News. Ukraine carrying out a daring attack, striking the main headquarters of Russia's Black Sea Fleet.
Large plumes of smoke could be seen over a command complex in Sevastopol in Crimea. Firefighters and emergency teams are on the scene. Shrapnel has been scattered hundreds of yards from the impact target, indicating it was likely a Western-donated missile. This ups the escalation ante. Russian retaliation expected to be very strong. Tom Rivers, ABC News at the Foreign Desk.
Rolling out for the first time this morning, a new high-speed train running between Miami and Orlando, Florida. ABC's Andrew Dimbert.
It's a big gamble. The private company behind it, Brightline, has invested $5 billion in the route. The train will hit speeds up to 125 miles per hour, but because it makes stops along the way, it may only beat driving by about 30 minutes. And it's not cheap. A round trip costing north of $140.
It's the first private passenger railroad in the U.S. in a century. Justin Finch, ABC News.
Your home for local news, weather, and sports across the airwaves and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
For the talk of Green Bay news, I'm Pete Schwabe. Here's what Green Bay needs to know.
The Winnebago County Sheriff's Office continues its search for 65-year-old Wayne Seams. Seams was reported missing on September 15th by his wife, who passed away unexpectedly a few days ago. Deputies searched the rural areas around Seams' house extensively, but there were no signs of him. Officials say before disappearing, Seams purchased a gun and multiple boxes of ammunition. He also did not take his wallet, phone, or car. He is without his heart medications and has other health concerns. Anyone with helpful information is being asked to contact the Winnebago County Sheriff's Office. Just a quick tip for Northeast Wisconsin drivers. The Wisconsin State Patrol says they will be in the skies over Door County on Sunday the 24th. The WSP says they will be looking for not only speeders, but aggressive drivers as well, adding they just want everyone to drive safely. Pete Schwabe for the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW 97.9 News.
Have you Googled yourself lately? Are there negative posts from an ex-employee or from a former client? Maybe an outdated news article or sensitive personal information about your family? Search engines don't always get it right. But right or wrong, it's your reputation on the line. That's where Reputation Defender by Norton comes in. One of the most trusted names in online reputation repair. Reputation Defender has been fixing people's search results for over 15 years. Their cutting-edge approaches help you to wipe away unwanted information in your search results. They also promote the good stuff, so that it rises to the top, helping you put your best foot forward. Your good name is too valuable to leave to the whims of a Google algorithm. Take control with Reputation Defender. You can start by getting your free reputation report card at ReputationDefender.com or call 800-401-6681 to speak to an expert. That's 800-401-6681.
As an emergency medical technician, I hope motorists can remember these four life-saving words. Buckle up, phones down. It means wear a seatbelt. Every seat, every trip. And when driving, stay focused on the road ahead. Protect yourself, spare your family, and emergency responders from needless trauma.
Do your part to help us move towards zero deaths on Wisconsin roads. A safety message, sponsored by the U.S. and Wisconsin DOTs.
The Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
Mino and the Mayor.
We're talking with Tony Mandrich. You're talking about your alcohol problems. Jim kind of mentioned here during the break, he said, yeah, the coaches didn't do anything about it. I said, didn't do anything about it. They were with the guys.
I mean, nobody forced anybody to drink. Drinking was just part of it, and it was kind of like that stereotype of, you know, being a guy or being an athlete, or it was just part of that.
Mino and the Mayor. Weekday mornings from 6 until 8 on the Talk of Green Bay, WGBW, and Oshkosh Air Support, WISS. And on the Civic Media app.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
We've all felt left out. And for people who move to this country, that feeling lasts more than a moment. We can change that. Learn how at belongingbeginswithus.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
Good morning. Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram, the Earl Ingram Show, Friday morning. We're talking about secret stuff. I'm talking to Mike Munson. Mike is ex-deputy of the Defense Intelligence Agency, executive in the CIA, now retired. Golfer, I think, is what I could best describe him as now. But we're having some interesting conversation about his experiences and about intelligence and the intelligence process. And we're talking now about secret intelligence. I'm not saying that Mike is necessarily the expert on intelligence per se, but he's a very smart guy. Mike, we were talking about the fact that you were involved in the dark, in the CIA, and you said that this Russian general that you were having dealings with during this period in the 90s where we were working, maybe 2001, where we were working on developing peaceful relations and helping the Russian Federation develop, how he became very kind of distant from you when you transfer from U.S. Defense Intelligence to the CIA, which was a proactive intelligence agency associated with all different kinds of intelligence. And so that brought to my mind the fact that you have been in the business during your entire career with secrecy and with doing things that were secret. And of course, a large country like ours necessarily has to have spying, and we necessarily have to be able to do things covertly. And I take it that in both of your capacities in the CIA and in the Defense Intelligence Agency, you were involved with at least supervising, if not participating in covert activities. Is that correct?
Well, we have a definition there's a different definition on covert activity between defense and CIA. Defense, when you start talking about covert activity, you're generally talking about human information. So we have overt human collection that the embassies do. We have officers of the United States military in probably 150, 175 nations around the world. There's about 200 now. We probably have them in 175. And their job is to collect open intelligence. That is, they look at newspapers, they talk to their counterparts, and they get information.
So it's not covert. So it's essentially not covert.
That's overt.
Yeah, overt. Right.
And probably 70% or so of the DIA work, or 80%, was done over. CIA, on the other hand, collects intelligence covertly, okay?
Yeah.
And by that I mean they have undercover agents, and they have things called, they call them NOCs, non-official cover agents. They might have somebody in the embassy that's not registered to CIA, and they collect information covertly. And
right.
That's
and the CIA, the CIA, I take it, recruits recruits covert operators. They purchase information where it can be had. I presume in Ukraine for a while they must have been purchasing information like mad, because my understanding in Ukraine is that sort of everything was for sale there. Is that right?
As far as I know,
yeah.
We had a to give you a good example. My wife was also a senior official, had a deputy who was a full Air Force colonel, and they moved him to Kiev to be the defense attaché. And he wanted to get some work done in his house, and so did the Australian defense attaché, but they refused to get any work done because they had to pay bribes. So they let it go for 60 days, and finally they said, well, it ain't working. If we don't pay the bribe, we don't get it done. So the country's replete with fraud and things like that, or at least it was.
Yeah. Well, it was right up until that famous Trump phone call where they were talking there about a condition for aid being the Ukraine sort of cleaning up some of its corruption. But the notion that I wanted to talk about in this segment was the fact that the United States has a substantial amount of covert operations, and I think we all agree that covert operations are necessary. But in a democracy, having things done secretly where the information is never available to the public does sort of create a worry, right? I mean, covert operations could go rogue. Covert operations could start operating in a manner which might not be perceived by the general public as being in the general public's interest. And how do we protect against that? I mean, what is the process ongoing that keeps us from having to worry about what it is that powerful people do in secret?
Yeah. Let me just make one distinction here, Sandy. There's over collection in the Department of Defense, mainly. In CIA, they call it clandestine collection. When you start talking about covert in CIA, you're talking about covert operations, which is something completely different.
All right. Well, let's semantics aside. Secret stuff, spying, secret stuff, making decisions about places to pursue special operations, secret decisions about executions, assassinations, essentially, that might occur in a covert process. We have a bunch of things that are handled secretly. And my question is, how do we as a member of the public get comfort that the powerful people who are capable of doing things in secret, I mean, through the president's office and the president of the United States, the president has access to all things that are secret. The president ultimately calls shots, but there's just this ongoing secret process. How do we get comfort about how that's conducted?
Yeah, there's a process to do both clandestine collection and covert operations. And I'm going to put aside covert operations now, and that's stuff like the old days, assassinations and things like that. Clandestine collection is pretty much the responsibility of what the requirements are, how important it is, and who can actually do the collection. So that goes through a requirements process that evaluates whether or not that information is really important and whether or not we have a way to collect it.
Let me just cut you off for a minute, Mike, just because we have this sort of a short segment. What I'm interested in getting at is the question of the decisions that are made about what we do secretly, not how we collect information secretly, but rather the things that we do, the way we conduct ourselves, the things that might affect third parties, the things that might affect the implementation of policy that's carried out secretly. How do we draw comfort from the fact that those decisions are being made in a manner which is in the public interest?
Yeah, that's more covert operations. That's not really straight collection of information.
Yeah,
and there's a whole process to do covert operations also, and that process runs through the National Security Advisor, it runs through the White House, it runs through the secretaries of the various departments that have a dog in the fight, And it's not done. It's not done by any organization. As a matter of fact, a good share of the sources of this type of stuff come from two places, one from CIA and one from the White House.
All right. So,
they make a proposal. The White House makes a decision. Somebody writes up an approach. The White House decides it likes it or doesn't. And that's sort of how that process works.
So the fact is that based on the White House leadership, it is possible through the White House leadership to utilize secrecy, so depending on, I guess, on the category of how it is that it's allowed to be kept secret, there is no oversight process other than trusting the President of the United States to be sure that the CIA operations are in the public interest and not necessarily rogue and in some private interest or nefarious in some way. We're trusting the White House. Yeah. Okay.
But it's a whole process, and there are lawyers involved at CIA. There are lawyers involved at the White House. These proposals go to the Hill. They go to six different committees on the Hill, and the Hill actually goes through these, and they have lawyers. And so to say that there's no oversight is actually not true at all.
Okay, but let's take the process that involved the death of the Iranian general through the use of the drone that killed him. Do you think that kind of a decision went through the Hill before it was carried out, or could that have been carried out simply through the White House and the CIA?
Well, I don't know anything about that.
I know you don't know anything about it. I'm saying, could it have? I'm not asking whether it did. I mean, I take it an instance like that happened. I'm just wondering whether, in your experience, that could have happened without oversight, without prior oversight, and only with post facto reporting.
I suspect it's possible, but I don't know for sure. And I do know that, generally speaking, you want the Hill involved, because if the damn thing blows up, you're in a real problem. I know there were a couple of things during my watch in Iraq, a couple of ideas that we tried to send to the Hill, and the Hill says, absolutely not.
Well,
we're just not going to do that.
Well, Iraq, that you bring up.
This particular thing, and the other thing you got to understand about this, Sandy, is calling a strike onto an area doesn't necessarily mean it's an assassination attempt.
Yeah. Although this Iranian general that Iranian general thing seemed to be pretty surgical. You brought up Iraq, and I think one of the things that we'll want to talk about is Iraq, because obviously Iraq was a situation where, in retrospect, it appears to have been to some extent premised on failed intelligence processes. And I think that fact has caused some concern amongst the American public and politically about the activities of our intelligence agencies. We have another break. We'll be back shortly, and we've also got a caller. We'll be taking him as well. We'll be back shortly.
I'm not sure what happened. Hopefully they call back.
Yeah.
Opt US Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous. As in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUSKids, and the Ad Council.
When you're high, you feel different. You think different, you talk different, you draw different, you listen to music different, but you probably knew that. Problem is, you also drive different, and not in a good way. That's why driving high is illegal everywhere. So if you're high, just don't drive. Make a plan to get a sober ride. Because if you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Don't let biased algorithms, or degree screens, or exclusive professional networks, or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Thanks for listening to your local Civic Media radio station. Learn more on our website, civicmedia.us.
Here's your updated forecast. A blend of clouds and sun this afternoon, with daytime highs approaching 78. Winds out of the east, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Lows around 61. Tonight, mainly cloudy. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Tomorrow, daytime highs approaching 75. A mix of clouds and sunshine and dry. Sunday, clouds on the increase. By Monday, low 70s. Sunday, upper 60s. By Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 60.
Where the fans own the team. This is the talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
Good morning. Earl Ingram Show, Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram. Earl's off doing his thing this morning. And here it is Friday, so you've got me. And we're talking to Mike Munson. We've got Mike Munson on the line. Mike is a friend of mine, and Mike has a very interesting background in intelligence, having been the deputy head of the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency and also being a high-level official in the CIA and having been involved in a variety of interesting processes along the way. We've talked about a variety of things, but right before the break, we started talking about the intelligence that led up to the war in Iraq. The apparent failed intelligence in retrospect and the controversy surrounding that. And I'm interested in your take on that, Mike, because that was during your watch, actually. You were involved in intelligence at the time of the initiation of the Iraq War. And of course, that created, in some respects, the basis that Donald Trump began to play upon when he ran in 2016, sort of attacking the legitimacy of our CIA and our intelligence processes generally. What happened there?
It's an interesting story. As you know, I spent a year of my life as a study director for the President's Commission on Weapons of Mass Destruction. It was really divided up into two portions. One was study the weapons of mass destruction issue with respect to Iraq. The other one was, should we reorganize U.S. intelligence? And with respect to weapons of mass destruction in Iraq, you know, first of all, weapons of mass destruction are chemical, biological, and nuclear capabilities, as well as a delivery means. We all knew Saddam Hussein had chemical and biological weapons and a delivery means because he used them.
Right.
I mean, it's a fact. It's not up to conjecture. He used them. We have facts that say that he used them.
Well, he used them during conflict with Iran, right?
He used them in conflict with Iran, and actually he used them in conflict with some of the
Kurdish forces.
Shia area in Iraq.
Yeah.
So we knew he had it. So fast forward to the war. It defies your imagination to say he had them, but he doesn't have them anymore. Okay? That defies your imagination. What did he do? Did he throw them away? Come on, give me a break. So we did a big study on it right after the war. We asked all the Iraqi generals, you know, did Saddam have weapons of mass destruction? And they all said yes. And we said, well, how did you know? Did you see him? Well, no. Well, how did you know he had them? Well, for two reasons. One,
He said we had them. And two, you said we had them. You, the United States, said he had weapons of mass destruction, and he said he had them. But when it actually came down to finding them, we never found them.
Well, so the question...
But to say war was all just simply about WMD, there were a lot of other incidents that took place there, like the attempted assassination of a U.S. president.
Well, the public, the public defense of the war, the case made by Colin Powell to the United Nations, all of that was premised primarily on the weapons of mass destruction argument, I believe.
Right, and Colin Powell was sold a bad set of goods from the United States intelligence community.
Right, so that I think that's the fact. Yeah, that's the fact. So he was given intelligence that didn't bear out, in fact, and whether there were chemical mass weapons of mass destruction or not, the information that he was given suggested there was other weapons. In fact, what the worry that was presented to the world was that there was potential nuclear weapons in the making.
There was a bit of intelligence that turned out to be fallacious that had to do with an African country,
right? Niger, the country of Niger, with the centrifuge tubes and all of that, which turned out to be pretty fallacious.
That didn't bear out.
Right.
There was intelligence that said that there was centrifuges in Iraq, which actually, on much closer examination, turned out to be mortar tubes.
Right. Exactly.
There was intelligence from an Iraqi POW who claimed that he was involved in biological warfare capabilities being produced. And when they ran at the ground, which, remember, this is the moving train, all this is going on at the same time.
Yeah.
They found out that A, he's an alcoholic, B, part of the intelligence community, CIA, didn't believe him. Part of it did. DIA believed them. And the fact is that there was no substance behind his claim.
So I raise all this because I believe that gathering intelligence and covert and overt intelligence gathering is extremely important, but it's also fallible. And I think the Iraq circumstance proved its fallibility. We've got a caller that calls in regularly, Mike.
You're absolutely right.
Huh? Yeah, yeah. And so, listen, Mike. I think you said you could give me an hour, and I really appreciate your doing that this morning. We've had maybe we'll get you on again if I can talk you into it, because you have a life's experience that is extremely interesting. I think from a Walter Mitty standpoint, half of our listeners would wish that they could be involved in covert activities. Thank you very much for the call. We'll be back after the break. I'll take the caller that after the break. Thank you.
From I-43 to I-41, this is the Talk of Green Bay, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM, WGBW.
ABC News, I'm Justin Finch. Auto workers could soon expand their strike. UAW Union President Sean Fain expected to announce if talks with automakers don't get better, more plants across the country could see workers walk off the job.
A week into this unprecedented strike, and there are no clear signs that this is moving closer to an end. In fact, the auto workers still picketing behind me, and the union is now poised to dial up the pressure.
ABC's Faith Abube. Workers want better pay, more benefits for new hires, and a 4-day work week The automakers say they're financially strapped as they build more electric cars. And a deadly bus crash outside New York City involving students and staff headed to band camp. The bus rolled over and down a highway ravine yesterday. Two adult women chaperones were killed. Authorities blamed the crash on a faulty bus tire. This is ABC News.
Missed your favorite show? It's easy to find it wherever you listen to podcasts. Apple, Google, or civicmedia.us.
For the Talk of Green Bay News, I'm Pete Schwabe. Here's what Green Bay needs to know.
One man is injured after a two-semi crash on a Shawnee County highway. The highway was closed for several hours. The Shawnee County Sheriff's Office says the crash happened sometime before 8 a.m. on Highway 47 north of County Road S. Authorities say one of the trucks crossed the center line and the other one swerved, trying to avoid it, causing the crash. One of the drivers was taken to a hospital with non-life-threatening injuries. The other was not hurt. Highway 47 did not reopen until about 3 p.m. An imitation Super Bowl trophy that was stolen has been returned. WLUK reports that the incident happened during a recording of In the Huddle Monday night at the bar on Holmgren Way. Green Bay police say they found the man who took the replica from surveillance photos taken while he was leaving the bar with the trophy. It has been confirmed the trophy is back where it belongs.
Pete Schwabe, WGBW 97.9 News.
The RPG came through the belly of the aircraft. We don't talk about the female combat wounded. These are our daughters and our sisters and our mothers. Wounded Warrior Project came into my life and taught me how to stand back up and get back in the fight.
The truth is, I think we all have this strength inside of us, but until you're tested, you just don't know it's there.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Beth by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
Radio keeps your community informed, entertained, and connected. It's what we're all about at the Civic Media Network of local radio stations.
We're having fun and moving fast to preserve hometown radio across Wisconsin.
This includes a commitment to news.
Now we want to invite you to join Civic Media's exclusive Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News. It's a place to share your community's news and chat with others from across the state about it.
Join the Facebook group, Wisconsin Breaking News, today. It's the perfect companion to your local Civic Media radio station. The Maggie Dawn Show.
My immediate thought when I read about this and then watched it today was, please don't die, Senator McConnell. I couldn't disagree more strongly with Senator McConnell's policy positions, but he has been one of the only elected officials that's in a leadership position for the Republican Party that hasn't completely supplicated himself to Donald Trump.
The Maggie Dawn Show.
Weeknights at 6 p.m.
on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. It's never personal, only politics. The Devil's Advocates Radio Show with Dom and Crute.
Weekdays from 4 until 6
on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
I like this one, Calvin. Who we got here?
This is Little Richard with Freedom Blues.
Little Richard, yeah. So, long, tall Sally. This is Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram, the Earl Ingram Show. We've been having an interesting morning. Spent an hour talking to my friend George Smiley, now Mike Munson, a spook. And how do people call into this show, Calvin?
You can call in at 844-967-2789.
Now, I think we have my friend CJ on the line. CJ, you're calling back.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call, Sandy. I really wanted to first thank George for his service to the country.
Mike.
I don't think people realize.
No, I was kidding about George Smiley. George Smiley's the character in the La Carre spy novels, but it's Mike Munson.
Oh, I'm sorry. I do remember that. I was confused when you said that. I'm sorry.
That's all right.
But Mike, yeah, really, I appreciate his service. I don't think Americans realize what those people, the sacrifices that they make. With respect to just a couple of things, Sandy, again, thanks for taking my call. you know, I did want to ask him and also say that the deal with Iran and Saddam was not forthcoming, and he did use chemical weapons and killed thousands of his own citizens.
Right.
18 UN resolutions that were not honored. He kicked out inspectors. But I did want to ask Mike about what just happened a few days ago with the prison release of from Iran, $6 billion, the ransom paid and released to Iran, if he thought that was a good deal, because...
Well, actually, just to be clear...
The president and Iran...
Wait, CJ.
One more thing.
No, CJ, just to be... Let's get it clear, though. It wasn't a ransom paid by the United States. It was... Iranian assets that had been seized by the United States, which were released by the United States. So it's just different than paying a ransom. They released assets that were Iranian assets, and they released them back to Iran. But go ahead.
And supposedly being able to be used for humanitarian purposes. And how did the president of Iran thank the president of the United States and the UN? He kicked out the inspectors just the way Saddam did. He kicked out the UN, the IEA, or the IAEA inspectors after he did that. And this is a ransom. Iran will get is searching for a weapon, an atomic weapon, and they're going to get one, and they promise to take Israel off the face of the map. This is what this president has caused by his weakness. And I would have liked to have heard your friend describe not only what happened in Iraq with the inspectors being kicked out, but exactly what's happened already with this president's failure and allowing this to happen, because that is their objective. It's not what we say. It's what they say. It's not what Putin promises to bring back the Soviet Union. That is what is happening. That's what this president's weakness in Afghanistan has caused, and the world sees it, and this is a disaster, Sandy.
Well, you said a mouthful. I think there'd probably be a fair amount of discussion associated with the realities of, for instance, the Iranian risk of wiping Israel off the map. But right now, what we're involved with is potentially forging some kind of an alliance, or at least an understanding with Saudi Arabia, in which we would grant to Saudi Arabia essentially the capacity to have a nuclear industry. Presumably, the nuclear industry, as under the agreement, would be for peaceful purposes, but granting someone the ability to enrich uranium creates the risk as well that they will have nuclear resources. Israel, for instance, has done that. Israel never admits that it has nuclear capacity, which it stole from the United States, but it does. And so, you know, are you in favor of the Saudi Arabian move?
I don't know if you watched the Brett Baer interview with Mohammed bin Salman. It was amazing. It was just on 1 hour. He never gives interviews. He spoke all in English, and he said, if America allows Iran to get a nuclear weapon, we'll have to, because they promised.
Well, Bin Salman, you know, Bin Salman is the leader of Saudi Arabia. He also is the man who apparently ordered the murder and dissection of Khashoggi in an embassy. So, I mean, Saudi Arabia is not exactly the model for democracy that we would otherwise express our interest in supporting. Would you agree with that, that Saudi Arabia is not a model of democracy?
Well, I think they're starting to realize that they need to be, but you're right. But you know what? This is caused, again, by being driven into the arms of Russia and China. And
who's driven into the arms of Russia and China? Saudi Arabia?
This president, with their oil policies and their attack on oil, what is happening with gas prices right now?
Well, Andy? I think we've
honestly
Yeah, what's happening with gas prices, the commodity prices? There's definitely an increase in the commodity price for gas and oil. The extent to which the president of the United States is causal for that. Russia just put an embargo on the export of all oil and gas, which will have an upward thrust on the price of oil and gas. Saudi Arabia has limited its production of oil, which of course puts an upward thrust on the price. So, that's not stuff that was either controlled by our president or is controlled by our country. OPEC was a cartel set up in 1973 for the very purpose of trying to control the price of oil. And it has rather effectively done so, trying to affect the supply of oil, particularly the international supply. What we have in the United States is primarily the capacity to affect the volume of oil produced inside the United States. And of course, we have refining capacity, which puts some restrictions. But it's the commodity price that has the effect on the prices. Thank you, CJ, for the call. So, as a sort of jumping to the next subject, I thought something we might talk about, which was spurred in my mind by the discussion this morning of Rupert Murdoch. Everyone knows who Rupert Murdoch is. He's a personality. He achieved notoriety and fame from a relatively young age. He's 90 now, but for 70 years, he's led the Murdoch empire from a relatively small newspaper process in Australia to an international behemoth in the media industry, in which he owns Fox News, The Wall Street Journal, and a whole variety of other news media sources, and has become and became a very important person in the world. So, he is an important celebrity. And we can go down the line of people who we can identify who have changed things in the world by dint of their own personal will and their own personal leadership. We've got Rupert Murdoch, who's retiring. We have Elon Musk, who's in the news regularly. Steve Jobs, who created Apple and the empire that Apple is and is now succeeded by Mr. Cooks. We have Jeff Bezos, created Amazon. Amazon transformed the retail world, had a huge effect on the economy of the United States and the world economy, and changed the way we do business. So it's clear that individuals and the leadership of individuals can have a significant impact on the arc of history. And so then the question is, what do people do with leadership? First of all, how do we find leaders? Why do people want to be leaders? And what do they do with their leadership capacity? In business, it's pretty clear. Someone in business only becomes a leader when the business that they lead becomes an important element in the economy and becomes important to people. But in politics, leadership can occur based on a variety of things. Leadership can be simply achieved through the notoriety of personality, the cult of the personality. And it seems as if in today's world, we've sort of become inured to the cult of the personality. The football team that is Aaron Rodgers' football team, the football team that is Josh Allen's football team. We don't know the names of anyone else, but we know the names of their quarterbacks. They have achieved notoriety and celebrity, yes, by dint of their capacity to do what they do, but also by dint of focusing on that individual rather than the team around them. We've got Donald Trump. Donald Trump is clearly has leadership capacity, has become a leader. He's become essentially the leader through a personality process. And what does Donald Trump stand for? If we asked 10 people on the street to identify what it is that Donald Trump stands for, or what it is that what policy he wants to implement, we'd get 10 different answers. Because Donald Trump is manifestly someone who has developed celebrity based on notoriety and not on purpose, okay? So I think what's clear to me is that the American public, the American political process, is crying out for leadership. But it's crying out for leadership for people who have a purpose to achieve underlying their leadership, not just the capacity to want to be a celebrity, not just the desire to be a leader, but the desire to accomplish something and for which leadership is really just ancillary. They need to achieve leadership and be a leader because they want to accomplish something. And I'm afraid that we in America have stopped looking for that sort of leader, and we're satisfied to simply be happy with and excited about interesting and notorious people. So we've got four or five people in this very small caucus in the House of Representatives, Lauren Boebert and the like, who are achieving notoriety, who enjoy being in the headlines, who want to hold up government processes. But for what purpose? They have no announced purpose. They can say, well, we want to throttle expenditures of the federal government, but they aren't willing to roll up their sleeves and talk about how, which expenditures, how it is that they intend on cutting down the deficit by either increasing revenue or decreasing which expenditures. What do they want to do about the defense budget, the biggest part of the budget? So, you know, to me, what's happened in America has been our lack of our loss of our ability to choose our leaders and to choose them thoughtfully and to choose leaders who are going to lead us someplace better. And instead we're choosing people who manifest the things that are inside of us that cause us to be angry or fearful. And so when we find leaders who are playing to our anger and playing to our fear, we need to worry a great deal, because it's people who want to be leaders for the purpose of being a leader who will draw on our fears, draw on our anger, bury our thought processes, and prompt us to be fervid in our support of them. This is the playbook. This is the playbook of autocrats. This has been the playbook through history. One can open up a history book in any century and find the populist leaders and find out what their playbook was. And their playbooks are empty of substance and full of emotional precursors, things that will poke you and make you more fearful and more angry so that you will line up behind them and follow them wherever. And today I'm afraid that's what we have in America. And I'm not just pointing my finger at Donald Trump. I'm pointing my finger at the general process in America of who we're deciding are our leaders and why. We'll come back at the end of this break. Tom is on the line again. We'll talk to him. And this is our last segment. I've enjoyed the morning. I hope you have too.
As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Brock.
I didn't realize that Tucker Carlson's like hemorrhaging viewers. And I heard yesterday someone was like, oh yeah, like no one's actually watching it anymore. I was like, oh, yeah, that doesn't really surprise me. It's kind of like Threads.
it was a thing for about 5 minutes.
It was like a
week.
Everyone was excited and then they moved on.
Well, it's like Scott Walker's presidential campaign. It's a big deal for about a week.
As Goes Wisconsin with host Kristen Bry. Weekdays 10 till noon on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app.
Talking to your kids about the dangers of vaping can be hard. Getting them to listen to hot gossip is easy. So here's some drama you could share with your kid. Dude, did you hear about Cassie and Jake? No, but did you hear that vaping can cause irreversible lung damage and nicotine affects brain development? Nuh-uh. You don't need to gossip if you want to have an open conversation about vaping. So if you want to get tips on when and how to talk to your kids, visit talkaboutvaping.org. Brought to you by the American Lung Association and the Ad Council.
You know him as the nose tackle for the green and gold. 1993 to 1999. And again, 2001 to 2003. 125 games, 292 tackles, 7 sacks, and a Super Bowl ring. But there's more to life than stats, and there's more to life than football. You're about to find out. Under the Helmet with the Gravedigger. Featuring Packers legend Gilbert Brown. Monday mornings at 8 on WISS and WGBS. And on the Civic Media app.
Looking for more local programming?
Check out our website, civicmedia.us, to see our entire lineup.
Here's your updated forecast. A blend of clouds and sun this afternoon, with daytime highs approaching 78. Winds out of the east, 8 to 15 miles an hour. Lows around 61, tonight mainly cloudy. Sunshine mixed with clouds at times. Tomorrow, daytime highs approaching 75. A mix of clouds and sunshine and dry. Sunday, clouds on the increase. By Monday, low 70s. Sunday, upper 60s. By Monday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Ray Miller. Right now, it's 60.
From the home of the frozen tundra, Green Bay's choice for news talk, 1590 AM and 97.9 FM WGBW.
Earl Ingram Show, Sandy Williams sitting in for Earl Ingram. He's off doing his thing, being a G-man this morning. He'll probably talk about it on Monday. We've been talking this morning about a variety of subjects. Spent a while talking to my friend, the spook, Mike Munson, an ex deputy head of the Department of Defense Intelligence. And most recently on this segment, I was talking about leadership. What is it? What are we looking for in our leaders? And what are we getting? And apparently, my view is that we've failed to set the right criteria in our own minds for who it is we're going to look up to for leadership. And as a result, we're getting leaders who simply crave leadership without purpose. I've got Tom on the line again. Tom's calling back in. Tom, how are you?
Good, Sandy. I'd just like to point out that CJ never did answer that question at the beginning of what it was to actually cut or not cut for policies. And I think we have to hold these people feet to the fire when they say, you know, just all they're doing is bringing up more and more complaints. The question I have also, Sandy, is what year was it that Vladimir Putin became the banker for Donald Trump? I really would be interested in that, because we know that Donald Trump declared bankruptcy many times here in this country. We know that he could not get money from anybody. And then all of a sudden, his banker became Vladimir Putin.
Well, I guess we
and
do.
I'm wondering what year that was.
Yeah, I don't know the year exactly, but I do know that Eric Trump was quoted in the approximately 2010-2011 period as saying that they had lots of money flowing in from the Russians, that they weren't able to get money from other banks, but that they had plenty of money coming in from the Russians. It was also in that same time frame that he was able to buy a condominium in a development project in Florida for $40 million and flip it very promptly to a Russian oligarch for $90 million, turning a cool $50 million profit in the process. And so there was definitely evidence, and it wasn't just uncovered by some news media, but self-declared by family members that the Trump enterprises were relying significantly on financial support from Russia during that time frame. So, you know, I don't know, banker, but it's certainly clear that Russian money was playing a big role in the processes, the business processes of the Trump family during the period after, say, 2005. And, you know, the businesses of Donald Trump have floundered rather consistently. He's given credit for being a great businessman. I think he was great at developing a Trump brand, a notorious brand, but of course the value of that brand has about collapsed as the result of people getting to know him in his public capacity as president. And before that, his capacity to be a businessman, if you measured it by his operation of casinos, for instance, was a complete flop. We've got a couple of other calls, Tom. I'm gonna let them on as well. Bill from Oconomowoc.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, absolutely.
Okay. Thanks for what you do. I'll tell you, you and Earl are quite a tag team. But your discussion with CJ was so interesting. I wished I had taped it. Because you've got such a talent in keeping emotions out of the discussion and just dealing with facts. And when you do that, your credibility is just through the roof, your integrity. As far as Trump, you were talking about Trump. I just wanted to add something to what you said. I never could understand how a man like Donald Trump came to run for the office of president with the baggage he had. He had a history, a bad history of poor 11 bankruptcies, multiple sexual assaults. In my day and age, that is not integrity for the office of president. No wonder the country wanted him out of office. It was like many of us couldn't believe it even happened.
Well,
but go ahead.
Well, Bill, I think though what you'd bet, you know, my segment from 9:30 to 9:45 was about this question about leadership. What are we looking for in leaders and what are we getting? And I think Donald Trump is a clear example of that, which is we've become enamored with notoriety and mistake notoriety for leadership. So if someone is famous, we give them credit, and we give them the kind of credit that might even get them elected president. So I would assert that Donald Trump got elected president because he was the notorious star of the Apprentice TV show. People got to know him. He achieved notoriety much like a Kardashian on reality TV, and that's who we elected. We elected him because he was notorious, and we elected him because his notoriety was aimed at stirring up anger and fear. And so that's really what prompted me to talk about the leadership and what it is we want in our leader and what it is we're getting in our leaders, because we're getting leaders who are interested in leadership only because they want to be a leader, only because they are looking for power, the power of leadership, without the purpose of leadership. And what we need to focus ourselves on is the purpose behind the purpose that people have in mind as they achieve leadership capacity. You know, and you can look back in history, and you know, the people who've achieved notoriety for good purpose. I know you're a staunch Christian, and I suspect we can point all the way back to the beginning of the counting of our centuries as the time when there was a leader who had great purpose. And however, we have had presidents and political leaders over time who have come armed with a significant purpose in mind, not just the purpose of being powerful. And I fear for America that we are falling prey to falling in line with and following people who simply are chasing power, and we are vicariously following them and trying to obtain the same power they have through their lives. And instead of that, we're going to be subjugated in the worst possible way, because over centuries, we've learned what autocrats provide to Tom, Dick, and Mary, which is little or nothing. So, you know, I hope we've had a variety of things to talk about here, Calvin. I know we didn't necessarily talk about a lot of policies like I tried to get us to talk about at the beginning, but you know, I fear that the reason we aren't talking about policies is because of the failure of our model for leadership in this country. And our model for leadership needs to be purpose and not power. And I'm afraid that we've lost sight of that. And in respect to that, many people in our Congress have lost sight of that and are behaving as if they've lost sight of it. So have a good weekend, folks. We'll see you on Monday. And I'm sick and tired of having so many hard times, babe. And from my body, hearts from my body.
Hi, we're the Goo Goo Dolls. We're fortunate that our daughters have what they need to grow and learn. But that isn't the case for nearly 13 million kids in the U.S. that struggle with hunger.
Childhood hunger is a heartbreaking reality that Feeding America is working to change. Each year, the Feeding America network of food banks rescues billions of pounds of good food that would have gone to waste and provides it to families and children in need.
You can help kids in need in your community by visiting feedingamerica.org.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
Civic Media radio stations providing your news, conversations, and fun you won't find anywhere else.
listening to the Talk of Green Bay.
WGBW 1590 AM Denmark. W250 CB Green Bay.